Well, as I said, welcome and thank you again for tuning up this afternoon. And for those of you who have dialed in, thank you as well. Just briefly to outline the order of proceedings this afternoon, I will just speak for a couple of moments and revisit again some of the background behind this review. I will then hand over to Mr. Ian Wilson, who has been chair of the independent review panel in relation to this investigation into the management of conflicts of interest at the Hawke's Bay District Health Board. To just go back, the review of the Hawke's Bay District Health Board followed significant concerns about the handling of two contracts and the relationship with the management of conflicts of interest around those contracts. The Ministry of Health commissioned the review and appointed the panel based on their experience and their expertise in relation to governance matters. The review itself was funded by the Ministry of Health, and we have taken particular measures to ensure that the panel has been able to operate in a way independent of the Ministry of Health. We have not been advisors to the panel. We have supported the panel, but the panel has worked alongside or with the advice of Crown Law in the deliberations. I received this report from Ian Wilson late on Friday afternoon. The final copy itself was completed following some formatting in the early hours of Saturday morning. I would like to thank Mr. Ian Wilson and the panel for their production of this report. It is a very full and thorough report. Ian Wilson is a very experienced chair. He's a very experienced in governance matters. He is one of New Zealand's most well-respected chairs of district health boards. He has been on the board of Mid-Central District Health Board since 1992. He is an experienced company director. He has previously been the chair of Waikato District Health Board. Ian is also a director on Crown companies in the areas of science, research and education. He is a fellow of the Institute of Directors and associate of the Institute of Management. Ian has had two other members of the review panel, Mr. David Clark, a professional company director with directorships in numerous private companies. He was until recently the managing director of Neurons, a pharmaceutical company, and has previously been the chief executive of South Auckland Health and its successor organisation, the County's Manukau District Health Board. Also on the panel was Mr. Michael Wigley, who is the principal of law firm Wigley & Company, before which he was a partner at Phillips Fox and has a particular involvement in public sector procurement and public law. I will now hand over to Mr. Wilson for this briefing, which in essence will be his last official task as chair of this independent panel. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Stephen.
Because all the microphones are right here, so if you move to the middle.
Well, thank you, Stephen. I would like to thank the Director General for his remarks on behalf of my colleagues and for me in the confidence he has shown in our work. I would also like to reiterate his comments about the system established and the lengths he and the Ministry went to ensure the integrity of the process. From the panel's point of view, it was important to maintain our independence, and advice of Crown Law was just part of that. This report relates to events that occurred before the Minister appointed a Commissioner to replace the Hawke's Bay District Health Board. There has been a lot of media comment about the process of compiling the report. I want to say quite emphatically that the panel worked very hard to ensure the principles of natural justice underpinned everything we did. The people involved in the matters we reviewed had a basic right and expectation to be consulted. Drafts of the report were made available as we progressed through our work, so those involved had the opportunity to comment and make submissions. This process was not a debate. It was part of being fair and treating everyone evenly. And the panel formed its own conclusions based on all the information we gathered in a very thorough and exhaustive process. My only regret is the way this process was abused by the very people it was set up to protect. Working drafts were released without our knowledge and in breach of undertakings for confidentiality. This sparked a range of unhelpful debate based on incomplete information. The panel worked very hard to make sure everyone was treated properly and fairly, and observers should not try to read more than that into a process that was scrupulous in its attention to detail and the principles of natural justice. It's a shame that our critics did not extend to us the same courtesy. As to our findings, the panel has made no comment on the appointment of the commissioner to replace the board, and it won't. And nothing we did was part of that decision. What I can say is the panel was sufficiently concerned about what it found that if the minister had not appointed a commissioner, we would have recommended at least the appointment of a monitor to oversee the implementation of our recommendations. Our review covered four areas: the handling by board member Peter Hausman and other members of the board of the Hawke's Bay District Health Board Community Services Initiative and the WellCare contract, the board's handling of conflicts of interest generally, board governance issues, and finally, recommendations. In terms of Mr. Hausman and the Community Services Initiative, his involvement in this initiative started before his appointment to the board. Once Mr. Hausman was appointed, both he and the board failed to act on what we believe were clear and obvious signs of a potential conflict. He and the chair did not follow good practice, and we believe there were many warning signals that other board members should have acted on. As to WellCare, the size of the contract was within the chief executive's delegated authority and did not need to go before the board. While Mr. Hausman was acting in his capacity as managing director of HCNZ, owners of WellCare, the panel's view is it would have been better if he had disclosed details of his interest to the board earlier than he did. The panel found the board's handling of conflicts of interest in general could not even pass the low threshold of good practice. There were inadequate processes and procedures, no training of note, and no board governance manual to guide new members. Concerns about the standard of governance were not new. There had been earlier recommendations for training and work to address earlier identified shortcomings. These had not been acted on to any real extent. Peter Hausman was not the only one to have issues with his handling of conflicts of interest. Other board members also had issues, and in some cases, the board allowed conflicted members to participate in matters without following a proper process. Individual board members involved in the matters we reviewed did not do their job properly. Those not directly involved should have been alerted by the clear and obvious warning signs, but were not. Importantly, the chair has an additional responsibility and duty of care, which we believe he failed. And yet it is so simple. If in doubt, disclose, discuss, and unless a statutory waiver is given, do not participate. The recommendations outlined in the review are nothing more than good practice. The fact that we need to recommend them, and so many, shows how little the board had in place. These recommendations are nothing special or onerous. They are what I would call bread and butter for any board, and their absence or underdevelopment speaks volumes. Our findings will no doubt be examined very closely. The extensive nature of our inquiries and the lengths we went to mean there will be people able to find pieces of information to suit any position. It was our job as a panel to take a holistic view and form an opinion about the board's performance and in areas reviewed we found them wanting. This was not a statutory inquiry. Neither was the board measured against the standard of best practice that could reasonably be expected of public funded organisations. The bar was set much lower, at a much lower level of good practice and common sense. This board failed to clear it. Had the board applied good practice and common sense to the matters at the heart of the review, they could have managed and resolved those before they became issues. I've been trying to think how to describe the situation, and I think it's akin to approaching a railway crossing with the lights flashing and driving through regardless. We do not make judgment as to whether this was inattention or deliberate, but it was definitely unsafe and not good practice. Finally, I take the liberty to give you a takeaway thought. If I were of a mind to analyse this report and the whole unfortunate saga further, I would first get the flavour from the executive summary. I would read the findings, some of which are in shade of form throughout the report. I would go to the very important conclusions at the end of each part, finishing with recommendations, which are a consequence of what the panel found and concluded from this very complex review. It is worth noting that all parties generally accepted the recommendations. It is unfortunate that the public of Hawke's Bay and New Zealand had been bombarded with a barrage of misleading, highly selective, and sometimes inaccurate information from some parties. This has been a disappointing feature of the review process and only confirms for the panel that urgent and critical changes at board level had to be made. The panel sincerely hopes that this well-researched report will refocus the public and all members of staff at the Hawke's Bay District Health Board back to the prime objective of any DHB, and that is to deliver appropriate health services to their regions. As this relates to Hawke's Bay District Health Board, it is now in the hands of the Commissioner, the CEO, and the panel hopes a reunited management team to make this happen. Thank you very much.
One final comment. I'll just summarise before we open up for general questions. I just want to thank Ian again. And as I said in my opening remark, this was a complex review, a review that was looking at two main areas, but which led us to show that there were multiple issues that required addressing at this board. I share Ian's concerns that undertakings given to the panel in relation to confidentiality were broken and abused. We need to ask ourselves, why was this the case? What I would like to do is to endorse what I think the review panel's key finding is. This was not a judicial review, nor was the former board measured against tough governance standards of best practice. This was, did they meet a bar of good practice? Were the procedures and processes that they had in place of common sense? And the answer to that is no. The very basic nature of the recommendations shows just how little work has been done by the board in this area. All district health boards have an obligation not only to manage conflicts of interest, but to be seen to be managing them. And this review shows that the former board failed on both counts. thank you again for coming here this afternoon, and we'll be happy to take some questions.
You talk in great detail about conflicts and interests. I think the basic point the public will want to know is, did you find that board members were using inside knowledge of contracts to profit themselves?
We found no indication of that.
So you talked in one particular contract about Peter Houseman dealing with the money for a contract of wealth here and the price that was paid. You didn't see that as him attempting to profit his own organisation?
We see that as very poor good practice.
Annette King, who appointed Mr Houseman, of course, to the board, has been saying all through this that his conflicts were declared well in advance and were well known and were well managed. Your findings seem to contradict that absolutely.
In relation to the appointment of Peter Houseman, the processes around his appointment and the statutory obligations were met. The issue in relation, and it was always known that Peter Houseman had interests with Healthcare New Zealand, that was always known. The issue in relation to were those conflicts managed is an issue for Mr. Houseman and for the board to manage, not an issue for Minister King to manage. The discussions that ensue around the board table and occur outside that in relation to the events of the board are up for the individuals and the board to manage, not for a minister who made an appointment.
Nevertheless, what does it say about her judgment that she's appointed a guy to this board who has failed to tell the board, oh, hey, you know, that contract you're thinking of letting out, I actually am the managing director of the company that has seen the tender documents several months ago and planning on putting on a bid for it?
No, what the report will show is that, yes, Mr. Houseman did have some dealings with the board prior to his appointment. The chair was privy to those dealings. There was a presentation in December and a follow-up meeting and meal. And so the chair was privy, as was the chief executive. Once Mr. Houseman came onto the board, his conflicts, he absolved himself from discussions at a board level. What the report highlights is that perhaps in relation to his conflicts, there was more that should have been disclosed about his prior dealings to that board.
But it says that it wasn't until September that he actually made clear that he had this involvement in that the company was thinking. But are you saying that it was actually up to Mr. Atkinson to take responsibility for that?
Let me just make this comment. Once a minister appoints a director in a company context or a board member and makes that decision, surely a chair and, in fact, the board has a responsibility and to put into action appropriate processes to make sure that conflicts are declared, that they're managed around the board table and handled appropriately. The chair makes an effort to actually get things going and make things work.
And you're saying that across the board at the Hawke's Bay District Health Board, those procedures weren't in place?
Yes, there are very poor procedures in place for, first of all, declaring adequately interests, but most importantly, actually managing those conflicts of interest going forward. There is some doubt about whether or not you need to disclose everything you did prior to coming on the board. Or the critical thing is, what plan have you got in place to manage any arising conflicts going forward?
You talked about the monitor. You've said a recommendation that at least the monitor has the position of commissioner. Is that a step too far?
I've got no comment on that. That's a minister's decision. All I can say to you is that we would have, in any event, recommended a monitor because that board certainly needed external input.
But given the findings that you've found about the board, you know, would you find that they should have been sacked? Would you have been happy to see them remain?
There are a couple of points I'd like to make in relation to the report from this board in relation to suggestions of a Crown monitor versus where we find ourselves today in relation to the Commissioner. As you know, this report was looking at the dealing and handling of conflicts only and matters around that. The Minister wasn't privy to any recommendations that the Board may have been coming up with. He received his copy of this report
this morning. And the issue in relation to why the minister appointed a commissioner is broader than, and the reasons for that, than what this review panel were tasked to find. But there is another point I'd be keen to make in relation to that, and that is that it's important to note that even though these matters were of a much more confined nature, i.e. the management of conflicts of interest, this panel was still recommending that the matters that were inherent in the relationships that existed around this board were of such a nature that they weren't going to be fixed on their own without some external input. And let's not forget that only a couple of weeks ago, it was this board who, in the lead-up, when who were written to around the minister's intention or signal of appointing a commissioner, actually put in place an injunction to prevent this report becoming public.
But even, I realise obviously it's more focused, but this doesn't exactly fill, and okay, now the board's been sacked, but I'm just saying, do you think that this justifies the sacking of the board? I mean, you've obviously seen a lot of how the board works, you've obviously got an impression of how competent or otherwise it was. Do you think that this report justifies the sacking of the board? And
I think, to use Ian's words, this report speaks volumes about what was going on within that board. We had a dysfunctional relationship with management. We had a board that wasn't managing conflicts well. It was, Ian mentioned that there were, the board itself agreed that something needed to happen many months ago, and yet still nothing had happened in relation to that. And as Ian said, there was a view that unless there was third-party intervention, government intervention, then matters around this board would not resolve themselves.
There's some that will say that there's a lot missing from this report and that the terms of reference are too narrow. In terms of reference, I note, say that you may consider any matter arising. There's obviously been a lot of politics around this issue, around the appointment of Mr. Houseman, what went on with the whistleblower, the involvement of Annie King's husband. Why have you shied away from dealing with the politics of the issue?
No, we haven't shied away from that. The reason we chose governance is that there is a very, very important link with managing conflict of interests around governance. Governance to us, and you will read it in the report, is as much about making sure you have a proper processes and systems in place. And if you haven't got proper processes and systems in place, how do you expect to be able to manage things like conflicts of interest? Now, we just didn't have the ability to expand our scope into a whole lot of other areas. The focus of our terms of reference was on the board, the management of conflicts of interest, and we chose to bring governance into that because there is a distinct link. You know, we've already been criticised for taking so long to do the report. Imagine what would be happening if we extended the scope into this, into that, into something else, and we had plenty of people wanting us to do that. But we had to focus on the key.
Was there any pressure on you not to delve into those areas by anyone from government or outside?
We had no pressure whatsoever.
Nevertheless, a lot of the public debate is around whether Peter Houseman received favourable treatment from the DHB's management. What was your view of that?
We saw no evidence of that. I haven't got a view of that. We didn't look into management's actions. It's outside our scope. We were concentrating on board management of conflicts of interest and other things.
National's already said that it's going to be a whitewash. It's not independent, and I know you've addressed that in your comments. But
yes.
Do you think that the critics have undermined the credibility of the report, and are you happy that it has been independent and can be presented with confidence?
Oh, look, I'm... Yes, absolutely confident that this is an independent report. Ian has stated that very clearly. This report is not a whitewash. Read it and take from it before you come to a conclusion. I would request that you read the executive summary, the attached material, the conclusions. There is no whitewash. This is a very full and thorough report. I have made a comment in relation to the appointment process, and I think that's very important to reiterate. In relation to the whistleblower, this was an employment matter which the panel, in the course of their investigations, was dealt with and resolved in the mediated settlement. So that matter has been dealt with, and it would be inappropriate for this panel to relitigate that.
Did you look at things such as the allegation about emails being deleted and having to be forensically retrieved? Is that part of your report, or is that something that's come from somewhere else?
Well, in fact, we did a computer search ourselves early on in the review. Unfortunately, it took about a month because the backup situation wasn't very good at the District Health Board, which is another process issue, I guess. But we've hopefully received all of the emails that all parties have found, and we've taken all evidence that we've been presented into consideration.
So did you have emails that were showing contact between Peter Houseman and Chris Clark as early as, I think it was about April or May 2004 on this contact? Because that's what the allegation is that there were emails from that time that were removed and had to be forensically retrieved. I'm sure you're aware of
that. Yes, we've received emails of all sorts, and that's why we say on the report, and I've said here today, is that there certainly is a case for Mr. Houseman to have disclosed much more than he did.
I guess what I'm asking is, are you concerned that anyone tried to hide evidence from you and that others discovered it and handed it to you?
Well, those are your words. Evidence was coming forward all the time. It was very hard to find some of this evidence, and as soon as we had the facts in front of ourselves, we took that into consideration.
Did you find any evidence that any emails may have been
deleted? Who's that? How do we ask
a
question?
I don't know.
There were emails that had been deleted, but we don't know whether they're relevant to the procedure or not.
You say in your report that something...
A lot of people delete emails off their computers.
Have there been substantial differences between the various drafts of the report?
Well, let's just talk about the process here. The process in any review like this is one of sending drafts out to the parties so they can comment on. We sent a first draft out so they could comment on these. We got submissions on that. As a consequence of that, we looked at it, we reviewed, and we made some changes because we have a requirement to actually take submissions into account. In fact, we took the unusual step of actually putting out a second draft so that we gave all parties every opportunity to actually feedback information to us, which we took into account. Yes, there are some changes. But as far as we're concerned, there's only one report. That's the final report. All drafts are redundant.
I think your report actually said that some of the preliminary findings were wrong. Is that the case? And why were those findings wrong?
It's a draft report. People submit. You listen. You understand what their point is. And you make changes.
There's been claims that you hadn't met with the board since about November last year, but you've had quite a few subsequent meetings with Mr. Houseman. Are you able to tell us what contact you've had with him since November last year and what contact you've had with
him? Well, we received submissions. Mr. Atkinson or the board didn't say, look, we'd love to sit down and have another meeting with you. I can tell you we received numerous phone calls from Mr. Atkinson in the new year leading right up to only a few weeks ago.
I think one of my colleagues in Hawke's Bay wants to actually ask us something. Marty?
Hello. Is someone on the line want to ask a question?
Yeah, hello. Is that Ian?
Yeah, hi, Marty.
Yeah, how are you?
Not bad.
You talk about sort of reporting, that sort of thing, being a bit unhelpful to you. How helpful was it that Mr. Cunliffe released parts of submissions made to the panel given to him by Mr. Houseman?
No, I'm not getting into that, Marty. Look, as far as we're concerned, the information that was put out by way of leaked draft reports was certainly most unhelpful, and most unhelpful to the public too, because here they have a whole lot of spin, as I said before in my address, which they hang on to. Very misleading, most unfortunate, and there only is one report, and that is the final report. We should forget those other drafts. They're absolutely redundant.
So you are including Mr. Houseman's submission in that comment there?
I'm not making any comment. Anybody who leaked confidential information is concerning.
Do
you have any adverse comments?
Thanks, Marty.
Sorry, do you have any adverse comments on the degree of discussions and, I guess, inside dealing between Peter Houseman and the Chief Executive?
We haven't noted any. Our focus was on the board around managing conflicts of interest.
But wasn't it about governance? And as a board member, governance when you're interacting with management, isn't that also a governance issue?
It certainly is.
So, but you said you just said you didn't look at that. Why not?
Well,
in relation to the WellCare contract, the report said that that Mr. Houseman should have done more to disclose to the board the contact that he had had in relation to his dealings with management. But what this report shows is that actually there are other board members, Mr. Dunkley, for example, who also had direct contact with management that was not appropriate in relation to conflict of interest issues. I think one of the downfalls that we see here is that in the absence of policies and procedures, also around the split between governance and management, we had an environment which Ian portrayed as a train progressing through flashing red lights. Part of the issues here is we didn't have policies and procedures that clearly defined the split between governance and management.
Based on these findings, would you regard any of these BHB members as suitable candidates for future representation at board level within BHBs?
Well, based on these findings, there's clearly more to be done in the training and induction and how board members manage their conflicts.
What I asked with these people that you've done the report on, do you see them as being suitable to work at that level again for a BHB governance role?
We have serious concerns around how this board was operating. There would need to be significant changes occur to give us a level of confidence that the players that were involved in this would be satisfactory in terms of future governance operations. There would need to be significant upskilling and upgrading and a response to an adequate response to the deficiencies highlighted before we could be led to that conclusion.
Can you just clarify something? Because Mr. Cunliffe wasn't sure on this point when he sat the board last month, but there can't be elections before the next elections are due, is that the case? So there's a commissioner now until 2010? Is that how the law works?
No, there can be a process around further supplementing local representatives into the Hawke's Bay board. What is important at the moment is determining the terms of the commissioner's appointment, and the commissioner can be appointed up until the next election. We're working with the commissioner in terms of what he is finding with his taking up that role, and any further modification at a governance level would need to be considered in that light.
So they could theoretically, the commissioner could be removed and there could be fresh elections?
Could theoretically be a board put in place there.
Was there anything that gave you...
I just want to get that distinction. Could there be election or would they have to be appointed?
Bruce?
No election.
Was there anything that you'd be aware there's two members of the board that have referred Mr. Houseman to police? Was there anything that you found during the course of your review that gave you concern there may have been criminal offending by anyone or other members of anyone involved in this?
Yes, we're not able to make any comments on that. There is an issue before the police, and it would be inappropriate for us to comment at all on that.
Is it fair to assume that if you had found something like that, you would have made your own referral?
I'm not going to make any comments.
The report could be seen to be pretty harsh. It was obviously pretty damning on the board itself, but against Houseman, it seems to be a little bit soft. Is there some leeway given to him because of his lack of experience as a board member?
I can answer that. No leeway given to him at all. We considered all the facts very, very carefully. We make it really clear in the report that he didn't adequately disclose in the cases that we reviewed he didn't manage his conflicts of interest appropriately, but neither did the chair manage those conflicts, neither did the board manage those conflicts. There is a joint responsibility when you sit around a board table in terms of managing conflicts of interest and
is
the like.
One of the recommendations, Stephen, is that central agency put out some guidelines or manual. Does that help the ministry take the responsibility for not doing that in the first place?
The ministry does run an induction program for boards, and we do provide updates and briefings, i.e. the findings from the Auckland Regional Labs. Boards were briefed on that. We are looking at the findings of this report, and we will look at what we can do to strengthen advice around the management of conflicts of interest. We have, in terms of candidate background information on what it means to become a board member, we have strengthened that this last year, and we will be looking at these findings to see what more that we can do to support that. I think the point I would want to make here, though, as Ian pointed out, is that some of this is, to use Ian's word, bread and butter, that there are some of the basic processes, procedures, and indeed common sense that we're missing here. And yes, as a central agency, we'll look to see what more we can do as well.
Mr. Little, to what extent was the representations of Russell McVeigh influential to the softening of between the first report and the final report in respect to Mr. Harrison, in that what has been said in Parliament in the first draft findings was very specific, whereas what here is, shall I say, a gentle form of criticism?
The panel was independent. We are of our own mind, and I can assure you that we made our own conclusions on all the submissions.
Did Mr. Houseman ever go through any kind of induction program?
To our knowledge, he didn't go through an induction program. That is one of the weaknesses that exist at Hawke's Bay. They didn't have an appropriate governance manual. If they had an appropriate governance manual, they would have had all the processes and procedures that one would expect good governors to go through. Induction is just one that's, again, bread and butter.
When did you deliver your report to Mr. Cunliffe?
I didn't deliver the report to Mr. Cunliffe. I delivered it to the Director General of Health.
When did he get the report, Mr. Yeah.
Cunliffe? This morning.
Has he been briefed at all, or has there been any discussions from any review panel members with him? Prior to that, about what's in the report?
Absolutely none. The review panel has had no contact with Mr. Cunliffe or previous Minister Hodgson.
I'll make it more strongly. I have never met Mr. Cunliffe. I have never spoken to him.
Do you know if he's had anyone's briefed him on what's in the second or first draft of the report?
Absolutely not.
Will you lift your objection to the first draft of the report being made public now, or will you? I understand there's another hearing.
No, there is only one report. I want to make that very clear.
There is
only one report. There have been draft findings. We embarked on a strict confidentiality regime to enable the work, the material that the panel had come up with in the preceding few months to be shared back with the parties. Some of the parties chose to go against that confidentiality regime, and personally I find that abhorrent.
So you'll continue to oppose any publication of what was in
the first draft findings? Yes, because as Ian said, some of those have had to be modified. Some of the findings were incorrect. There is only one report, and that is the report that I have in front of me now and is available over there that you have. There is one report. There have been draft findings, but there is one report.
If that draft is read out in Parliament, isn't your injunction quite pointless?
Yeah, and, you know, I think New Zealanders hold principles of natural justice highly. This was a report and a process advised by Crown Law to share some of these findings back with the affected parties. I find it amazing that some of those affected parties have chosen down the track to to have presumably photocopied when they had declared that they would not. So we have to ask ourselves why. Yes, I do get concerned that an agreed process with a board and parties affected has not been adhered to. Concerns me hugely.
They would say they've done it because they believe the report's been watered down.
I mean, I think, you know, that is a crazy justification. How did they know that the report was going to be watered down? They signed a confidentiality statement to say that they aren't holding copies of this report. We find out later that they have. What does that tell you about the players involved in this organisation?
They later, though, got copies of the final version, obviously, so that they could respond to that. So they knew that the first draft was different than the second, potentially. So that's what provoked them to release details of the first.
They should never have retained copies of the first draft. We agreed a process with them that said, or the panel agreed a process overseen by Crown Law with them, which required an assurance that first draft, that some of those draft findings would be returned. We find out now, after the second draft went out, that some players had retained that. I ask you, in terms of principles of natural justice, do you think that's a fair thing?
They might argue that it is.
Yes, it does.
It reinforces some of the issues around how this board was operating.
That these people weren't honest and upfront.
Yeah, well, they didn't abide by due process.
But don't you think you give it some level of credence or credibility by suppressing it?
Look, every party entered into confidentiality understandings and arrangement. Surely we can rely on that. And as Stephen said before, the whole process around these sorts of reviews, certainly this review, was one of being open with the parties, giving them an opportunity to submit, for us to consider all those submissions and make the appropriate changes. I mean, if you turn the penny over and we didn't actually listen to the submissions and we didn't make changes, I guess there'd be grumbles and grumps as well on that.
So we can't please everybody. So what harm is there in the public seeing the evolution of the report through the draft stages of the final report?
Because we have to hold true to all the parties that signed up to a process. We have other parties to consider in relation to this report. And as Ian said, some of the material wasn't right. Some of the conclusions drawn may not have been right.
Have you got it? Because obviously, I mean, the fact that someone's felt the need to write down the first draft of the report signifies for a start that there's a level of deep mistrust here. Have you got any insight as to what's caused that? How come all of the people, or some of the people on the board, have such distrust of others on the board? Is it because Mr. Houseman was a government appointee, or is it...
Well, look, I think there's been enough in the media in terms of outlining the difficulties that that board had with a board member coming in from outside. But for us, we didn't review that. It was all about reviewing conflicts of interest and the board's part in that.
Can you clarify at what point you mentioned a moment ago talking about taking back or something the findings from the first report and then can you just run us through the process, what happened after the first report findings were actually circulated?
Yes.
At what point Crown Law got involved and why?
Oh, okay. Let's fix it. Yes, let's do that, because I think it's a very, very good question and very important that we walk through that. Firstly, and Stephen might just want to talk about the panel selection, because that was something that took place inside his ministry. But be really clear that we didn't have Mr. Wigley on there as our legal counsel. He was there as a procurement expert. That's the first point. The second point is that we needed to have some legal advice, and Crown Law was assigned to us as our legal advisors. So that all worked. So as far as the process, sorry. From early on, we didn't actually use them right from the beginning, to be truthful. We didn't.
Well, my understanding was the initial draft was peer-reviewed by Hugh Rennick and Mr. Haussmann, and at that point...
No, Crumb was involved.
Yes, much before that.
And was advising us on the process around natural justice and the need to share draft findings with affected parties.
So just to run you through the process very quickly, and we actually have put that in the report as well, so you'll pick it up too. But from the outset, we had lots and lots and lots of meetings. So we met with all sorts of parties and so forth and so on, and we took their submissions and we went back and we reviewed those and we started to come up with some preliminary views, very important preliminary views. Once we got a feel of that, we actually put our first draft report out. First draft report went out to all the parties so they could submit and give us their views as to our particular position at that time. They did. We got full submissions. We took all those into account. And we ended up, because of the strength of submissions and the fact that we did get some issues, I'm not going to say we got them wrong, but different pieces of information came forward that we had to take into consideration. So we done all that. So then we felt that we would undertake a second draft report. It was really important that we adhered to natural justice in every possible way. In fact, we went overboard to do that, I suggest. So the second draft went out, and we asked for the same response in terms of submissions. Now, I guess we had some parties who saw the first draft and saw the second draft, and they thought, you know, this is not what we perhaps expected. But it was our decision to make changes as a consequence of those submissions. So we received submissions to the second draft, and we now have a final report, which is our only report. As far as I'm concerned, those other reports are totally redundant. They don't mean anything to the panel whatsoever. And it would be terribly misleading for those reports to be to surface, and it would be absolutely wrong in terms of the confidentiality understandings that we gave to a whole lot of parties if that was breached.